From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Democrat leadership claims a mandate and a wide-ranging discussion with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Reagan Republican, and Christ follower. With the results of the national election still in doubt, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer held a news conference. In it, Nancy Pelosi suggested that the results of the election was a mandate to pass the HEROES Act, which would fund marijuana banking, checks for people here illegally, and is filled with leftist pet projects. And what did Chuck Schumer have to say? Well, here's a clip of his remarks.
This election was maybe more a referendum on who can handle COVID well than anything else. The Donald Trump approach was repudiated. The Joe Biden approach was embraced. And that's why we think there's a better chance to get a bill in the lame duck. If only the Republicans would stop embracing the ridiculous shenanigans that Trump is forcing them to do and focus on what people need.
And joining me to talk about those shenanigans they're being forced to uphold, like decency, common sense, and fiscal responsibility, is the House Minority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana's 1st Congressional District. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony, always great to be back with you.
So let me just ask you point blank. Was there a mandate in this last election to pass the HEROES Act?
I'm not sure what election results they're looking at. If Speaker Pelosi's talking about the results that ended up having her get a net loss of at least 10 seats as opposed to a net gain of 10 seats, which she's predicting, that's a 20-point swing. That's a pretty big mandate against socialism. Not for a bill that, as you point out, deals more with marijuana than jobs. It sends $100 checks to people here illegally. Those are the kind of things that are in the HEROES Act.
Yeah, and it goes even further. I mean, there's a lot of policy that is woven deep into the HEROES Act. Not only does it have a huge price tag, I think it's roughly $2 trillion, but it redefines terms like non-discrimination to advance their whole sexual orientation, gender identity issue. It actually will preclude by in effect faith-based organizations from being able to be a part of the coronavirus relief. It also, Stephen, I know something you've worked very hard on when it comes to the educational relief provision. It excludes private religious schools and homeschooling.
Absolutely. And Tony, of course, days like now where you've got some school systems that are still refusing to educate children in the classroom, there is no better, more important time to have the debate about school choice. If somebody's going to take your money but not educate your child safely in person when other school systems are willing to, then parents ought to be able to go to those places that will safely educate their child while taking the money. So much in that bill, from bailing out failed states, they have a section that releases an untold thousands of criminals from prison. They still can't even tell you how many people that would apply to. What does that have to do with COVID? Now, look, there are bills that would get huge bipartisan votes that would just renew Paycheck Protection Program loans for small businesses. The fact that they look down on small businesses as if it's some kind of corporate bailout. There are millions of families that don't want to be unemployed and their businesses are about to go under. You could save those jobs. That's where our focus ought to be.
Right. And it also, we made reference to the marijuana, what that is in part, there's several elements, but one is the Safe Banking Act rolls that into this, the full text of that bill, which grants marijuana industry direct access to the banking, which currently is prohibited under the Controlled Substances Act because it's unlawful. What does that have to do with the coronavirus?
Right. It's a totally separate debate that is contentious and, again, has absolutely nothing to do with COVID-19, with the businesses who are dying on a vine right now because some of these governors are still shutting everything down, even though the protocols are out there for how to safely reopen, whether it's your restaurants, your schools, your businesses. They're killing jobs. And by the way, deaths from non-COVID-related things like substance abuse, overdose, depression, suicide are all off the charts right now because of the shut-in. And they won't look at those deaths as part of the cost of these shut-ins.
Right. Let me just from the New York Times, we're going to talk about Charles Schumer's mandate. The New York Times, in their exit polling, on the top five issues that matter in deciding how you voted for president, number one was the issue of the economy. 35% said it was the economy, followed by 20% of voters saying it was racial inequality, followed then by the coronavirus pandemic at 17%, followed then by crime and safety, tied with health care and health care policy at 11%. 17% to me does not sound like a mandate.
No, and it was not a mandate for them. But look, they don't care about what the will of the voters is. You saw Chuck Schumer just Sunday in New York saying, if we change Georgia, we change America. I mean, do the people of Georgia recognize that Chuck Schumer wants to bring his New York values to America using two Senate seats in Georgia? He literally would view the two Georgia seats as proxy votes for the state of New York and their values. I don't think that's where Georgia is, but that's what they're trying to do. And you even saw Joe Manchin standing up saying he's not going to vote to pack the court or to defund police. And, of course, he and AOC are now in a big back and forth. So liberals are fighting socialists right now over what happened, what went wrong in the election. Only can Schumer and Pelosi be so delusional as to think that that is some kind of mandate. Why are they fighting within their party right now in a vicious war if they had a mandate?
Well, I think if you want to talk about taking New York values to the South, you might want to ask outgoing Senator Jones from Alabama how that worked out.
Right. He voted with Chuck Schumer for those New York values and got repudiated. And he outspent Tommy Tuberville probably 5-1 and got destroyed. And think about Michael Bloomberg, Tony. Michael Bloomberg went to Texas, spent $100 million to flip the Texas legislature from Republican to Democrat. And what ended up happening is they got more Republicans. And he did the same thing in Florida. He spent over $30 million in Florida to flip their legislature, and they rejected his New York liberal values in Florida, and they increased their Republican margin in Florida. So maybe Bloomberg will spend tens of millions of dollars in Georgia to help us win those two seats and hold those two Republican Senate seats.
Let me ask you a question, Steve. I know you're headed to a meeting with the new incoming members of Congress, but I want to ask you this. You've pointed out what's been happening around the country this election. The Republicans gained, I don't know, they're still being tallied, but you're going to be within striking distance of the majority in the House. And I think in the midterm election that happens. You've got the Senate was not handed over to the Democrats, as we've been discussing. There's two runoffs races in Georgia that will decide the outcome there, but there's still, it's right now 50 seats in Republican hands. You've got state legislatures that have made gains across the country. What the blue wave that was projected did not happen. The pollsters were wrong. I'm going to talk later about that with Scott Rasmussen. But the reality is there's some inconsistencies here. Why the president, who many people wrote his coattails, these state legislatures, the Congress, it just doesn't add up. And I think that's why a lot of people are asking questions about the outcome of the presidential election.
Yeah, Tony, you know, there are a lot of states that had serious irregularities and didn't even follow their own laws. I mean, look in Pennsylvania. The law is clear that any ballots that come in mysteriously after 8 p.m. on Tuesday night when the voting ends aren't supposed to be counted, and yet they were counting those in. No one's been able to give us an exact number. If it was more than the margin, then that changes Pennsylvania because that violates their own law. And the Supreme Court even told them the other day to keep all of those ballots separately because there are serious questions raised there. Georgia's state law has a mandatory recount because it was such a close race. You look at some of these other states, Michigan, Wisconsin, where they weren't even allowing Trump poll watchers, which their laws allow for you to watch what they're doing. They wouldn't let you watch what they were doing. What are you doing behind closed doors when the law says you have to let people watch you and be transparent? You kick them out the room.
Yeah.
Clearly, you had to be doing something nefarious if that's what happened in violation of your own state's law. This has to be cleaned up. And I applaud President Trump for standing up for the rule of law and standing up for his rights, which are clear under the law. You go back to 2000. Al Gore would be president for that next 4 to 8 years if they would have just said, okay, AP called it for Al Gore. I guess he's president. Well, guess what happened? He didn't get the votes. No state has certified Joe Biden as the winner. Not one state has certified Joe Biden as their winner. That's a swing state. And yet the AP wants to declare him the winner. That's fine for them, but they're not the ones who send electors to Washington to select the next president.
Yeah, this is far from being decided. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Always great to be with you, Tony. Appreciate the work you do. God bless.
You can find out more about Steve Scalise, as well as a variety of tools to help you as you pray for the election and our country as a whole, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, churches have had to make difficult decisions. Now, as states and cities reopen, church leaders are deciding whether to reopen for public services or continue providing live streams and smaller home-based ministry. Considerations such as protecting the health of worshipers, the public witness of the church, the spiritual and physical needs of members, and complying with government mandates are all a part of that conversation. Complicating matters are the strict reopening policies that some overreaching state and local governments have ordered churches to follow. Family Research Council has published an issue analysis on church reopenings, which provides a list of churches across the country that have been subjected to unequal treatment, explores the theological and legal implications of unfair restrictions on churches, and offers a path forward on safely reopening your church. Access this information at frc.org/reopen. It has long been known that some children suffer from a disconnect between their perceived gender identity and their biological sex. Studies have shown that, when left to themselves, most children with these conditions outgrow them and do not identify as transgender adults. Today, however, these conditions and identities are increasingly being embraced and actively affirmed in children, not only through social transition, but through radical physiological interventions, like using drugs to block normal puberty, cross-sex hormones, and gender reassignment surgery. Each of these procedures has serious negative side effects, including permanent sterilization. These procedures are often not reversible, and research has not shown that these procedures are effective in accomplishing their purpose, which is to improve the patient's mental health. Instead, they violate the most fundamental principle of medical ethics: first, do no harm. Learn more by visiting frc.org/gender-transition. A global crisis is unfolding, one not often acknowledged. Over 80% of the world's population lives in countries with high levels of governmental or societal religious oppression. Christians should care about international religious freedom for several reasons. First, because God calls us to care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Second, because Christian theology aligns with the principles of religious freedom. God does not coerce us into believing. Likewise, we should not use government to coerce others. True faith must always be a free choice. Third, there are practical humanitarian benefits when religious freedom thrives, leading to a freer, safer, and more prosperous societies for those that embrace it. For all these reasons, Christians should advocate for societies in which everyone can freely choose and live out their faith. Learn more at frc.org/IRF. That's frc.org/IRF.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In the last 4 years, the Trump administration, through the State Department, has made great headway pressing countries around the world to allow people to practice their deeply held religious beliefs without interference from the government. On Tuesday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins for a discussion on religious freedom around the world.
Secretary Pompeo, welcome to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks so much for joining us. I made reference to your five-nation Asian tour last month, and then today you made the comment that the U.S. is not finished when it comes to getting tough on China. What do you mean?
So there's still a great deal of work to be done, and this work will continue in this year and next. It'll be ongoing. The challenge presented by the Chinese Communist Party, whether it's the terrible human rights abuses, whether it's the absolute failure to allow anyone to practice their own religious beliefs, whether that's in Tibet or in northern Mongolia or the Falun Gong, or the Christians or Catholics, the challenges they present in the South China Sea, and then the fact that they've destroyed tens of millions of jobs here in the United States through their intellectual property threat presents the greatest challenge, I think, to American sovereignty and American national security of our time.
Well, I watched your press conference earlier today. You know, I've been affected by Corona, so I'm now watching everything on computers. So I was watching your press conference, and you again stated when you went through the litany of accomplishments of the Trump administration that religious freedom has been at the top of the list. And when you look at China, obviously one of the greatest abusers, but they're not the only one.
No, sadly, too many of God's people are not permitted to practice their faith in too many parts of the world. There are restrictions on that. We're very blessed here in the United States. We have challenges of our own, but we sometimes take for granted our ability to be protected by our First Amendment, our capacity to worship as we so choose and not to have a state religion. And President Trump's made it a real priority around the world to recognize this as the most one of the most fundamental rights that each of us has by nature of our humanness, or the fact that we were made in the image of God. And we have worked diligently on this all across the State Department, all across the world, to increase the likelihood that every human being will have that same chance to worship as they so freely choose.
And I've witnessed that. I've seen it firsthand, you know, from my capacity, both as an advocate here at the Family Research Council, but also as the chairman, past chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, how this administration has leaned in like none other when it comes to religious freedom. And gains have been made. But I want to ask you about this. You know, this, and you pointed this out today in your press conference, that this was the first administration to prioritize religious freedom. What happens if America pulls back from this fundamental human right?
Oh, my goodness. On a personal level, it will just be an enormous reduction in the ability of human beings to live the way God wants us to live. And that's just when nations oppress, when governments oppress in that way, the reduction in human dignity is of staggering proportions. It's also the case that there is a direct connection between religious freedom and the capacity for tolerance in nations to build out and create prosperity for their own country. And so you'll see not only a reduction in human wealth, but in humanity's conception of the way that every one of us must be permitted to exercise our own conscience.
You know, you and I both avoid controversy. That was a joke. A little tongue in cheek here. When you look at religious freedom, and there's now a growing body of research that underscores what you just said, that with religious freedom comes economic freedom and prosperity. With prosperity comes stability, which becomes a winner for the United States in terms of our national security. In fact, I would venture to say there's more evidence to show that religious freedom being advanced and protected is a much bigger issue in determining global stability than addressing climate change, which seems to be the banner of the left, which they march under. So I am concerned if there is a pulling back that we will see in an already unstable world even greater instability.
I think the science on that front is very clear. I think the capacity for human beings to exercise their own God-given freedoms enhances prosperity, enhances security. To your point about stability, it makes nations more stable. We've seen this in countries in Southeast Asia. We've seen this in countries in the Middle East, where advances in religious freedom leads to a more prosperous people and a nation that is more stable. Those are good things for America to have that around the world. That makes Americans more secure as well. And so I hope that whoever is leading this country forward will continue to keep this work that we've done here at the State Department on religious freedom at the top of their agenda.
Let me ask you this, Secretary Pompeo. When you look back over, before coming to the State Department, you were at the CIA as the director there. So I think you've had a little less than 3 years, I think, in your post here at Secretary of State. What would you point to as your greatest accomplishment at the State Department?
Oh, goodness. You know, Tony, I haven't really had a proper chance to reflect on that a great deal. Look, I've worked under a president who has permitted our State Department to do the things that we've just talked about. We've talked about working on religious freedom. We have fundamentally reoriented the world's attention to the challenges presented by the Chinese Communist Party. But we've done good things for the people of China. We've made advances for the people of Iran, trying to tear them into a position where they can get what it is they so richly deserve instead of the kleptocracy that has foisted so much harm upon that country and put Americans at risk. I could go around to different places in the world, and I think what President Trump has done, a policy of realism, right, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, acknowledging that the Golan Heights was a proper part of Israel. These are things that made sense. They were common sense, but no president before him has chosen to do those things. And I think each of those has made the American people more safe and gives us a better opportunity for prosperity here at home as well.
I also think it has changed America's reputation of being strong, bold, courageous, and whether you like it or not, America has followed through on the promises that President Trump made.
It truly has. When President Trump came into office, America's reputation around the world was for one of appeasement. If the members of NATO didn't want to spend the money to defend themselves, well, so be it. If there was a problem, America would be prepared to go engage around the world by putting its military there. President Trump said, no, there's a better solution. We'll build out real like-minded alliances. We will urge other nations to do their fair share. We will demand reciprocity in our trade relationships and in our security relationships. And each of these countries, many of these countries have embraced that, and they welcome that. They want American leadership. They want us to be there alongside them. And they recognize that partnering with the United States of America, whether that's Japan or India or South Korea or the Philippines, all of these countries that have worked with us on these core problem sets, I think would say today that they are far more appreciative of the model that President Trump has chosen vice the one that was here in place in America before his time.
I know the leaders that I have met with, that has been the sentiment. Secretary Pompeo, you are the nation's top diplomat. You work for the president carrying out American priorities overseas, but you interact with the world's leaders. How are the world leaders reacting to our own election drama that's playing out before us?
You know, I have talked to a handful of them about it. The topic comes up. I think they're encouraged by the fact that we've had an election. We're now going to go through a process where we ensure that the rule of law was followed, that our Constitution was followed, that those who were lawfully voting had the chance to have their ballot counted, and those who were voting in a way that was inconsistent with law won't have their ballot counted. I think they see that. They see our thoroughness, our transparency, the rule of law. They're perfectly fine with this extending on for a few more days or a little more time so that we can get to the right answer. You know, Tony, we work on elections all around the world. This is what we demand of other countries,
right, too,
that they follow their rules, their processes, and to get to a conclusion that their people can accept as valid. And it's what we're doing, and it's what I think leaders around the world have an enormous amount of respect for, that the United States does this every time and always.
I think that is an extremely important point. I don't know that the average American understands the role we play in ensuring free and fair elections abroad, encouraging the transparency, one person, one vote. And then if we're not living up to that same standard here, it undermines our credibility abroad.
Amen, Tony. That's certainly true.
Let me go back to the press conference today. You were asked a question about whether or not there would be a smooth transition to a Biden administration. And I saw a smile on your face. You said that there would be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
I was asked the question about, you know, was there going to be time for an adequate transition? And having come in as CIA director in a previous transition from one administration to another, your listeners should be highly confident that there will be a full, capable transition. Our adversaries should know that we're ready. We're continuing to work. We'll work all the way through January. And then on January 20th, we'll have a transition, whether it's to a Trump administration, a second Trump administration, as I spoke about today, or to an administration led by former Vice President Biden. The American people understand that our transition will be complete and thorough, and that if we spend a few more days validating that we have this process right, ensuring that we've protected every American's lawful right to vote. That's the right thing to do, and we need not worry that there won't be an adequate time for transition, which was frankly what the question was suggesting.
I mean, I think it is important to every American, to both political parties, that we have confidence in our system and that every election is a fair, transparent election, and we know with certainty who the winners are. Because without that, we cannot have confidence that in our system, which upholds our republic.
Tony, it's absolutely true, and it's important, too. As Secretary of State, it's important that the world can see that we did it in that way, that we conducted this way. They're counting on America to be stable, secure, prosperous, to do the right thing, to follow our rules. They're counting on us to do this. We don't demonstrate our capacity to do that, then we will have not only done something egregious here at home, but we will not have set a good example for the world.
Well, Secretary Pompeo, I know you're going to be back on the program again in the future, but I do want to take this opportunity to thank you for your leadership, both at the CIA and at the State Department. It's been remarkable to see what has happened at the State Department, which I've joked before is really ground zero when you talk about the swamp in D.C. It is foggy bottom. And you've led those people. I think needed strong leadership. You provided it, working alongside President Trump, and it's been remarkable to see what has happened internationally on so many fronts: the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, and I just commend you for not, in any form or fashion, backing up from the values that you hold and that I believe are central to America's greatness.
Well, Tony, that's very kind. You know me. I'm always up for working hard to make sure we deliver on behalf of President Trump and what the American people asked us to do when he was elected. I appreciate your kindness.
And as always, first and foremost, always a tank driver, right?
Amen. Long time ago. Tony, thank you, my friend.
All right, Secretary Pompeo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. So long.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.